Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary is trending, and among the reasons why is because of language like this from White House advisor Kellyanne Conway speaking last month on Meet the Press about the size of President Trump's inauguration crowd.
You're saying it's a falsehood, and they're giving Sean Spicer, our press secretary, gave alternative facts to that.
Alternative facts. Now, after that statement about alternative facts, one of the most shared tweets on the topic came from Merriam-Webster's Twitter account, which offered the definition of fact, a piece of information presented as having objective reality. Merriam-Webster has seen spikes in searches on a number of words that dominate the news lately. To talk about how language is evolving, or maybe devolving, in the modern political age, we're joined from Springfield by Peter Sokolowski. He's already laughing at my introduction. Editor-at-large of Merriam-Webster Dictionary. Peter, good to have you. Thanks for joining us at Radio Boston.
It's great to be with you.
So, as a dictionary editor, how do you hear the words that are being used by politicians today differently than the rest of us might? What are you noticing?
I think you just said the word. The word is notice. A dictionary editor notices interesting usage. For example, to pick one at random, the use of the word deplorable as a noun. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is when you say basket of deplorables, that was an immediately sort of galvanizing statement in a political sense. But from a strictly linguistic standpoint, we only define the word deplorable as an adjective in our dictionary. And she said deplorables, making it a noun. And so immediately—
The she being Hillary Clinton, of course.
That's,
yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's
right,
Hillary Clinton. And so not only was it a point of interest from a news perspective, it was a point of interest from a language perspective.
Right.
And we found very little evidence of the word used as a noun. It's an innovative use, and it shows the flexibility of language. So basically, it's not and it's an important point, I think, to your question. For lexicographers, it's not a question of judgment or correction. It's a question of noticing how the language is sort of twisted and bent, because that's the way language evolves.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a living, breathing thing. And just out of curiosity on that one example, is that enough for deplorable to move from adjective to adjective and noun in the Merriam-Webster dictionary?
Well, that's a very good question. That was clearly a very prominent use of the word by a prominent newsmaker. But actually, we look for a lot more than that. In other words, we would like to see sustained use, first of all. So that doesn't meet that criterion right there. We need to see that the word is used over a period of time. It has to have a widespread use, that is to say, by many people in many places, many publications. And it also doesn't meet that criterion. And finally, it has to have meaningful use. That is to say, it has to have sort of an agreed upon discernible meaning to everyone who uses it, or most people who use it. And so far, that would basically be a word that we are watching for evolution, but it would have to be adopted by many others over a period of a few years before it got its own sort of home in the dictionary.
Well, Peter, give us some examples. For example, examples of words that have been added recently that speak especially to this moment that we're living in right now.
Sure. We just a week ago or so added 1,000 new words to our online dictionary, or more than 1,000 words, which is a big group of language information to bring in all at once. And it's true that some of them do kind of feel of the moment, but it's important to remember that those three criteria I just mentioned apply to all of these words, whether they're tech words or slang words or words for food or science terms. But, for example, net neutrality is in the news these days, and that is a noun that we just added to the dictionary. But also things that we do with technology, like binge watch or photobomb, or the kind of organization of technology, like abandonware and botnet. These were added to this last batch. Also, words from medical terms. We have, for example, elder care and supercentenarian. That is to say, a person over 100 years of age, and that reflects clearly a piece of sort of medical innovation, which is to say that people are living longer.
Interesting. Now, Peter, you're able to track when a word sort of shows up in the news, you're able to track people sort of searching for definitions, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, that's the sort of surprise consequence of putting the dictionary online. We put the dictionary online in 1996, so a good long time ago now. And that was the first time for us that lexicographers could see what the public were curious about, what words are looked up. And initially, this was sort of a static list. They were kind of hard words or abstract words, words like affect and effect, which are so difficult in English, or integrity or paradigm or pragmatic, kind of abstract words that were always the SAT words. But then we saw in the first instance, one of the first news events that was widely shared online, which was the death of Princess Diana. And we saw the word paparazzi spike and the word cortege on the day of her funeral and the word princess itself. And so that told us that we can follow the news according to the vocabulary that sends people to the dictionary. And we have now about 100 million page views a month. So it's a large sample from which to register this this curiosity and to see what people look up and also what they don't look up.
It's interesting. I've got a very short list here that I want to ask you about. I understand the word vetting after the president signed his executive order on refugees. Suddenly a lot of people were searching for the word vetting, right?
Sure. And it makes sense. Because in this case, as frequently lately in political context, if a word has a broad general application, that's one thing. But when it's used in a very specific way, if it seems legal, if it seems technical, if it seems governmental, that can send people to the dictionary. And it's important to remember something. Curiosity is not ignorance. Most of us as adults look up words that we have encountered before. The words that people look up, one of the gratifying things we learned by putting the dictionary online is that the words that people look up tend not to be the sort of flashy new vocabulary that's brought in by the internet or by youth culture or by Hollywood movies. The words that people look up are the bread and butter words of ideas like ubiquitous and integrity and paradigm and conundrum. These are the words that people have slight trouble with the nuance, and they come to the dictionary for that nuance.
A few more words that I understand you've seen spikes of lookups recently in response to political events. Impugn, after Mitch McConnell accused Elizabeth Warren of impugning Attorney General Jeff Senator Jeff Sessions on the Senate floor. Vetting, after the president, we talked about that one. Mm-hmm. Nepotism, after Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner was appointed to a senior role in the Trump administration.
Right. And I mean, these are very specific words. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, we're a dictionary. We talk about words, and this is what we, you know, we stick to the words. But with regard to impugn, for example, it's just interesting to look at the history of that word and recognize that its Latin root, pugnare, means to fight, which is the root of pugilism, boxing, or pugnacious, which means aggressive, right? And with nepotism, that comes from the Latin word for nephew. And it goes back to the idea that popes in the Renaissance would give the plum jobs to their own blood relatives. And so the fact is our living language has a group of words, each of which has its own biography, doesn't it? And it has its own story. And that's the story that we like to tell, the story of these words.
Speaking of the story of words, I understand that fascism was one of your most searched words in 2016.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting story.
Yeah, it is. And it has to, you know, you have to remember that it was also one of the most looked up words in 2015. As a consequence, you know, it's one of these words that is very near the top of our all-time lookup list. But I hasten to add that the word socialism is also up near the top of that list, as is the word democracy. And so it's, again, important to remember that curiosity is not ignorance. And curiosity also is not an accusation. People are curious about this word for many reasons. In the case of fascism, it's been in kind of the ether. It's been in political debates. It's been in social debates. But also, it's an intrinsically interesting word. It might be a little hard to pronounce. It's certainly hard to spell if you don't remember where that C goes after the S. Also has an intriguing history. You know, it comes from fasces, the bundles of wheat that were carried by the ancient Romans as symbols of military power, later adopted by Mussolini in Italy in the 1920s. And, of course, it's on the back of our dimes to this day. So the fact is it's a word that connects to the present through the past.
You know, I'm interested in knowing this. You've said that the goal of Merriam-Webster, and correct me if I'm wrong, is to tell the truth about what a word means. Is there? Do you get the sense, or is this just sort of a kind of perennial complaint by many people? But do you think people are now being more untruthful about what words mean, or using words more loosely, specifically in the political sphere, which is sort of where this conversation started? What do you think?
Sure. Well, there's certainly, you know, there's an intensity of interest at the moment about facts and truth. We know that because when the word fact spiked for several days, that was clearly the subject of the national conversation. And it's also a little bit unusual for us to see a word like that, a very common word, a word that's really used on a daily basis by most of us, to see that kind of intense interest, to look it up in the dictionary, to get the real specific linguistic facts about the word fact. Mm-hmm. So that does tell us something a little bit unusual is going on. Now, I'm not able to talk about the politics, really, but the fact is this is something that is often true in political debates. People are accusing each other of relative truthfulness. But it does seem to be that we're in a moment where people are seeking kind of objective truths and maybe researched and trustworthy sources. And to that extent, it's gratifying that people are turning to the dictionary because that's essentially what we've always done, isn't it?
It's really, really interesting. So let's end. I'm just going to ask you one more question is right where we started, and that is that wonderful moment when Kellyanne Conway used this term alternative facts, and then Merriam-Webster's Twitter account offered this definition, definition of fact, a piece of information presented as having objective reality. So understanding that definition, does the term alternative fact, I mean, can that possibly make sense given what we understand the word fact to mean?
It is an innovative use of language.
Okay, we'll leave it there. Peter Sokolow is editor-at-large of Merriam-Webster in Springfield, Massachusetts. Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. What a pleasure. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. Coming up, a new children's book looks at the story of one prisoner's reentry through the eyes of his daughter. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.